they stay fresh. If I cook too much and have leftovers, however, I don't mind eating the same meal twice in a row. I often cook a good amount and freeze some for the days when I'm busy or tired and don't feel like making a meal from scratch. On these nights, thinking about what to eat for dinner feels like a chore. So I pull a homemade soup out of my freezer that will thaw quickly, or make a small salad, or toast an English muffin. When I'm feeling this way, I usually give myself some ice cream, too. I always eat dinner at the table. I make it pretty with candles and flowers. Sometimes I put music on, but not always. I say grace and take a moment to feel gratitude for the food I am fortunate to have. I admire the plate and the color of each portion. I am aware of each bite. It's much like a Zen meditation. I eat fairly fast because I like my food hot. But when I am through, I am aware of being well fed. And I always say thank you to myself for the meal I have prepared. I usually play a game of solitaire before doing my dishes. I don't like rushing off to the kitchen right away, and I want time for my meal to settle. My dinner routine is a good way to start my evening, which I often spend sitting by the fire with a good book. Though I miss Bill, I'm pleased with the ritual I've created. I have found contentment eating my evening meal alone. What will happen to my weight if I eat intuitively? Eating in accordance with your body's wisdom may cause you to lose, gain, or not change your weight at all. Regardless, eating intuitively over time will get you to a stable weight range, set point, and will reduce your chances of the harmful yo-yo cycling that regularly happens to dieters. You'll know when you get to this stable range because your clothes will fit pretty much the same way each day, which is a great alternative to getting on a scale. You will probably experience small fluctuations in accordance with your menstrual cycle if you're female. Illnesses, injuries, stressful life experiences, vacations, long work hours, changing seasons, and travel are other determining factors. It is also a natural and beneficial process to slowly gain weight as you age. Try not to use intuitive eating as a good diet, even if altering your habits causes your body size to change. This will keep you locked into a diet mentality and take your focus away from positive self-care behaviors. Determine success by how your body functions and how it feels from the inside out, not by a number on a scale. Creating a new relationship with food was a crucial step in healing from my eating disorder. I had to learn at the most fundamental level how to feed myself. Until that point, I had either binged or starved. And having been a diet junkie since the age of 12, I knew nothing about what, when, or how much to eat. I started by observing my hunger signals around the standard times for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I paid particular attention to the consequences of not feeding myself when I was hungry and of eating when I was already full. A supremely helpful promise I made to myself during those healing days was this: to forgive myself for any action regarding food and eating I considered a mistake. For the first time in a very long time, I knew I deserved kindness and realized I needed to commit to giving it to myself. Somewhere in my subconscious mind, I understood I was a beginner at learning how to feed myself, so I didn't have expectations of perfection. There were days when I waited too long to eat and then felt ravenous, which caused me to get out of balance with my food choices and amounts. I was consciously aware that when I got too hungry, it didn't matter what or how much I put into my mouth. I just had to eat. When I ate beyond satiety, I took time to breathe deeply into a place of forgiveness. I reminded myself that eating so much didn't mean I had to keep eating in the moment because I'd been bad. Nor did I promise to starve myself the next day or go on a run to atone. Instead, I saw myself as the mother of a small child learning a new skill and knew I would never berate my child for eating too much or forgetting to eat. I developed a decision-making process to help me figure out what to eat when I was hungry. It started with the question, what do I really and truly want to eat right now? You'll notice I didn't ask myself, what do I need, but rather, what do I want? Because need at that point in my life was still linked to should, and should had nearly killed me. This distinction was extremely important in helping me change my relationship with food. The rebel in me has forever balked at the words, you should, especially when spoken by me, to me. I gave myself permission to eat foods that had once been on my forbidden list. I practiced eating them without guilt and slowed down enough to actually taste what was in my mouth. It is important to emphasize here that this process was a practice, which means there were times when I felt guilty, scared, anxious, and overwhelmed. As mentioned earlier, in these moments, I either reached out for help from people I could trust, or I used relaxation techniques such as walking, meditating, or writing. I trusted that letting myself have whatever I wanted was a step towards healing and kept at it, even when I struggled. Over time, the obsessive dialogue that swirled through my brain, mostly giving me messages that I was bad and shouldn't be eating whatever I was eating, quieted. Granting myself permission to eat anything, at any time, in any amount, removed the forbidden foods once held over me and ended my binging. I no longer experienced guilty pleasures, because pleasure was positively associated with food. I learned to distrust all messages that use guilt in the same sentence as pleasure. How I shopped for food was also important in my process of becoming an intuitive eater. I gave myself extra time to look at food before I purchased it. I tuned into my body's physical needs by paying attention to the colors and textures to which I was drawn. Was red calling to me? Did I want something crunchy? If yes, then a red pepper was most likely going to be part of my next meal. Did the thought of mashed potatoes make me happy? Did I want a hearty stew? Yes, because it was the middle of winter and my body needed warmth and comfort to get through the dark, cold days. Had the seasons changed? Was my body craving brown rice instead of potatoes? Were the beautiful fruits of summer calling to me? Was I craving protein, veggies, carbohydrates, or something sweet? Did I crave something bitter or spicy? Answering these questions brought a wide variety of foods into my daily meals. Once, during my early days of healing, I attempted to follow a cleansing diet. 4 days in, I found myself standing alone in my kitchen shouting, "I want cheese!" Realizing the absurdity of the moment, I laughed long and hard and ate some cheese. It tasted heavenly, and I savored every morsel. Obviously, no one had forced me to restrict my food, but I had internalized the cleansing diet's rules about the right way to eat healthfully, just as I had when on restrictive diets. But these rules didn't work for me either. The rebel raised her voice again, and fortunately, I listened. If I hadn't, chances are I would have started sneaking behind my own back to eat the cheese. Standing in my kitchen that day, I made a vow to be the ultimate and compassionate authority to help me figure out what, when, and how much to eat. It is a vow I have kept for more than 30 years. Because no food was off limits, I learned over time, and through much trial and error, which ones felt good in my body and which didn't. I did this by paying attention, in a non-obsessive and guilt-free manner, to what I consumed throughout the day, and mentally cataloging how my body felt after eating different foods in different amounts. An internal scanning process of my body and food choices developed, one that eventually became second nature. Intuitive eating tips. 1. Allow yourself to eat the foods you are hungry for without the threat of starting a restrictive diet the next day, even if you eat previously forbidden foods. In doing so, you can eat a reasonable, satisfying amount without binging, because you know you can have them the next day or even later in the same day. This state of mind releases the, "this is my last chance to eat what I want," feeling that can lead to overeating. 2. Quiet the critical voice that yells at you for eating bad food, so you don't have to rebel or numb yourself against it by eating more or less than is physically comfortable. 3. Savor the foods you choose to eat, so your taste buds, brain, and all of your senses get as much pleasure from the experience as possible. Fully tasting your food, no matter what it is, allows your body to guide you in how much to eat, because you naturally want to stop when flavor and pleasure diminish. This is a natural signal your body gives you to indicate it's had enough. 4. Keep snacks with you if you are habitually hungry throughout the day. This may mean taking a bit of extra time before you leave the house to prepare food to have with you, but it's worth the effort. It's easy to lose the ability to listen closely to your body's needs when you get too hungry. Taking the leap. The secret of health for both mind and body is not to mourn for the past, worry about the future, or anticipate troubles, but to live in the present moment wisely and earnestly. The Buddha. Intuitive eating is a practice that allows us to be fully present in each moment so we can make food choices that are appropriate for our unique bodies and lives. It is a sustainable, positive method for creating a peaceful relationship with food. It honors our intelligence, wisdom, and common sense, frees us from our obsession with weight, and provides the opportunity for true physical nourishment. Intuitive eating allows us to do our best in regard to our current life circumstances, honoring that it isn't always easy to have what we want or need. I know it can be daunting to step away from rules and restrictions about food. I still remember how it felt to let go of believing other people knew better than I what was right for my body. I was scared to trust myself, unsure if my instincts would guide me in a positive direction. Some days, it felt as if I were in a tiny rowboat, adrift at sea with no life jacket to save me if the boat tipped over. At the same time, I felt powerful and free. I knew I was in charge of my own life and loved the challenge of trusting my innate wisdom to guide me. It takes courage to make your own choices about what, when, and how much to eat. Intuitive eating brings you back to the basics. What do I want? And how do I feel? Through your practice of deep listening, you become intimately aware of your physical hunger and satiety cues, and how food feels once it has been eaten. You learn to follow the food you eat all the way through the digestive process to sense what happens as it is absorbed into your body. And you feel the impact of that food on your levels of energy, enthusiasm, and joy. Experiment to learn what is appropriate for you. Let go of any need to perfect your intuitive eating practice and enjoy the process of getting to know your body on an intimate level. It is not your appetite or cravings you should fear, but the loss of your connection to the beautiful body that houses your soul. It got so pounded into my head that there was no solution for food addiction. I was told, if you have an eating disorder, you will have it for the rest of your life, and the only solution is to be completely in control of what you eat. When I heard Connie's story about recovery and how she now relates to food, I thought, there is hope. Even though I didn't know if I could do it myself, I felt like it was possible, and that was the moment that changed me. I now know it is possible for somebody who had this history to be okay and to come out on the other side and be a beautiful, powerful, brilliant light of hope in the world. Asiya A., Body Positive Leader. Intuitive exercise. Activity in and of itself is health promoting, regardless of whether or not people lose weight. It helps lower glucose. It helps lower blood pressure. It increases muscle mass. It's magic. Tony Martin, MD. Physical activity is a wonderful thing. It keeps our bodies healthy and strong and reduces mental stress. Exercise releases brain chemicals that make us feel happy. It can be a social time to connect with friends, or a solo pursuit that gives us time to meditate in motion. The human body is designed for movement. It does not function as well with a sedentary lifestyle. But the demands of the modern world make it difficult to live in rhythm with our physical needs. Many of us have to sit in front of computers all day, or in our cars for long hours as we drive to and from work. Instead of pushing our bodies to the limit every day just to survive, as our ancestors did, we have to think about fitting exercise into our lives in some way, shape, or form. The primary messages we receive about exercise are that we should do it to burn calories, lose weight, and sculpt our muscles in order to mirror the images presented by the media. These images have somehow become synonymous with health, though they have more to do with selling magazines, products, and services. Also, too many people believe the fallacy that only rigorous exercise leads to good health. In their book, Healthy Pleasures, Drs. Sobel and Ornstein summarize the results of numerous studies done on the health benefits of moderate exercise. One study found that getting an average of 30 minutes of physical movement per day through activities such as gardening, walking, fishing, dancing, and doing physical chores cut the occurrence of fatal heart attacks in middle-aged men by 40%. Increasing the intensity of the exercise and the amount to 2 hours a day did not make a difference. This research shows there is a marked difference between the amount of exercise needed to maintain good physical health and the amount necessary to change the shape of your body. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with wanting to sculpt your body or exercise vigorously. It feels good to have strong muscles and to push yourself to see what you can do. But things go awry when an exercise program is based on unrealistic goals focused on weight loss or a particular body shape. Joining a gym in January, only to quit several months later because you don't see the results you want, does nothing to improve your health. Ample research proves that staying physically active, not achieving a certain weight, is the key to longevity. Stephen Blair, a professor of exercise science, epidemiology, and biostatistics at the University of South Carolina, and former researcher at the Cooper Institute of Aerobics in Dallas, has done extensive research in this area. His findings consistently show that the people who live longer are physically active, independent of body size. His decades of research on tens of thousands of individuals consistently produce data confirming that people with large bodies who exercise on a regular basis live longer than thin people who don't. As he told a New York Times reporter in 2009, obese individuals who are fit have a death rate one-half that of normal weight people who are not fit. Blair, an avid runner, describes himself as short, fat, and bald, and jokes that running more than 70,000 miles in his lifetime has still left him short, fat, and bald, but in better physical shape than if he didn't run. Intuitive exercise honors our need for fun. We may not always feel like exercising, but by listening to our body's responses to different types of movement, we learn what inspires us to get up and go. Our motivation is equally as important as having willpower, perhaps even more so, if we wish to stay physically active and increase our chances of living a long, healthy life. Rachel Marcus, body positive volunteer, personal training, fitness for the body you're in. Before my journey to athleticism, I had a brief and passionate love affair with jazzercise. This was at a liberal arts college in a small Midwestern town. The college students would straggle in, uncoordinated, still in pajamas, and take their places behind the middle-aged women from the town who had been in the class for years. Our hodgepodge group would follow the lead of a short, chubby woman named Jazzer Pat, who jumped around on a wooden stage and smiled at everyone, even when they were moving in the wrong direction. By the end of the semester, many of the college students had moved to the front of the class. After a childhood and adolescence of being teased and humiliated by gym teachers, athletic kids, and soccer coaches, this was my first positive exercise experience. I had always assumed sports weren't for me. And if someone were to tell me 15 years ago that I'd grow up to be a personal trainer, I would have looked at them as if they had said I would live on Mars. It turns out that jazzercise class was more useful for my career than anything else I took in college. Creating a size-positive fitness practice was never in doubt. If I had heard any disparaging body remarks in jazzercise, or if only thin people had surrounded me, I would have never become the confident fitness enthusiast I am today. I try to bring the playfulness and joy that Jazzer Pat embodied to the people I work with. I begin an average day by skipping back and forth across the room with a client, then working with someone with a chronic injury on a balance obstacle course, then counting to 20 for a woman holding a plank position for the first time, even though she keeps insisting she could never do that. Later in the day, several people who come to a meeting of my running group are convinced that they need to lose weight before they can really run, because this is what the doctor has told them. They leave that same day having run, slowly and steadily, more than they thought was possible, and without any pain in their knees. Too many of us are convinced that we have obstacles to exercising, that we are too fat, too old, too injured, too uncoordinated. We internalize the gym teacher yelling at us from across the field, or the fitness instructor telling us to work off those brownies. Simply believing in, honoring, and listening to my clients can go a long way towards shedding these internal obstacles. The process of becoming more fit is like any other life journey. We make gains by showing up as we are, being willing to make mistakes, laughing, forgiving, and trying again as we develop our muscles. Learning to exercise intuitively. Fitness should be a healthy pleasure. Popular health advice hypes vigorous aerobic exercise and most often ignores less intense, more enjoyable forms of physical activity. Because of the hype, many people feel discouraged. They can't achieve the ideal prescription of vigorous exercise sessions. And the sleek look of the sinewy models glowing out of magazine covers somehow evades them. So they do nothing. Robert Ornstein, Ph.D. David Sobel, M.D. Healthy Pleasures. As with learning to eat intuitively, finding exercise that is right for your particular body and life circumstances is a process of trial and error. Our bodies are all made differently and prefer different types of movement. Some people feel better in water, others on land. Some feel better doing slow movement, others with vigorous exercise. Each one of our bodies has its own specific requirements for exercise that will support our health. If you work with a personal trainer or other type of physical fitness expert, remember to conduct your own experiments to see if the information given to you is appropriate for your body and life. A trainer who emphasizes weight loss may be setting you up for what exercise physiologist Glenn Gasser, Ph.D., calls yo-yo fitness, similar to yo-yo dieting, to describe repeatedly starting and stopping exercise programs and losing whatever gains were made each time. Our bodies stay healthier when we avoid all-or-nothing approaches to both eating and exercise. Physical activity that is sustainable throughout our lifetime is the goal, as well as the key to increasing longevity and reducing risk factors for disease. If you're looking for a trainer, find one who de-emphasizes the importance of weight and BMI, and who works with clients to create exercise habits that are fun and sustainable. The type of movement that feels best to you may be quite different from that of other people in your life. Your preference may be to exercise alone, or perhaps you enjoy the camaraderie of being with friends or in a class. Time limitations due to a work or school schedule may leave you searching for a half hour here or there to walk or do exercises in your home. Physical limitations or illnesses and access to a gym might also be factors. The key is to find activities that you want to do, ones that give you pleasure and fit your lifestyle and physical needs, because then you have a greater chance of doing them on a regular basis. I once talked to a woman who said she hated to exercise. I asked her if she liked to dance. She got a big smile on her face and said, "Oh, yes, I love to dance." She hadn't realized it was a wonderful form of exercise she could do alone or in the company of others. When I had an eating disorder, I exercised compulsively in a way that ended up leaving me feeling depleted. Now, since I've started the work towards self-love, I've been able to find joy in my exercise, and it leaves me feeling built up and stronger. Andrea J., Body Positive Leader. Becoming an intuitive exerciser took me through a process similar to the one I experienced when I learned how to feed myself again after bulimia. I was an obsessive runner during the years I was trapped in body hatred. My primary purpose for running was to stay thin. I didn't care if I was harming myself by exercising too much. I just wanted to burn calories. When I made the choice to heal, I had to figure out how to exercise without obsession. I knew I needed to move my body to stay strong and healthy and to alleviate stress. I also knew I loved to exercise. Movement of all types had given me pleasure throughout my life. At first, I backed way off. I stopped running altogether because I wanted to separate myself mentally from the attitude I'd had when it felt like I was literally running to save my life. I discovered that hiking in the hills with my good friend Annie was a pleasurable way to get exercise. We wandered through the hills discussing dreams and goals, not the size or shape of our bodies. When I allowed myself to return to running on a track, I was no longer able to keep up with the fastest people whose pace I had been able to match before. I created a mantra: slower than some, faster than some. I silently chanted every time someone whizzed by or when I passed another runner. This helped me remember what I loved about running: the feeling of lifting off the ground, getting into a zone where my mind became empty and creative thoughts could emerge, and being outdoors watching the changing weather patterns transform the colors of the San Francisco Bay. I have learned how to make exercise work for my life. It is something I enjoy, not a chore I must endure based on what other sources say is right for me. My exercise patterns have changed as my life has evolved. I go through phases where I prefer different types of movement, from running on the treadmill and lifting weights at my local YMCA, to hiking in the hills, to doing strengthening and stretching exercises at home, to just doing my errands on foot in my neighborhood. Elizabeth: I love to move. I love to exercise. It gives me joy and pleasure, so I do it as often as I can. When I use my arms to lift weights, they feel like powerful tree limbs. Having strong arms makes my household chores easier to do. I like to keep my legs fit by using the elliptical machine at the gym or by hiking up mountains. When my legs are strong, I feel better equipped to face the difficulties of life. My strong legs keep me feeling solid on the ground, unbreakable and powerful. I exercise in order to feel my breath, because when I am breathing deeply, I remember what's true. I can feel what I know and remember what is important in my life. Breathing helps me get in touch with what I need to learn in the moment. It gives me insights about the truth of my clients' struggles and reminders of important things to tell my family. Love is one of the central themes that surfaces when I breathe deeply with exercise. I am filled with the desire to tell the people I love how much I love them. I also remember the fun things I want to do in my life, like have adventures. I also exercise to give my body the treat of physical play. I experience pure bliss doing somersaults in a swimming pool, while the rain pours down on a winter's night and the steam rises off the water. It's like a mini trip to Hawaii, and I get to have it right here where I live. In these moments, I am indulging my body. I believe strongly in the importance of physical play. Simply put, I love to move. I love the feeling in my body when it is being used. When my muscles are in motion, instead of being crunched and tense from sitting in my work chair thinking all the time. Movement brings my center of gravity down from my brain towards my middle, where I feel connected to the earth. Staying strong makes me feel more capable and keeps me from getting injured when I do the things I love to do with my body, like dancing and backpacking. Regular physical movement hasn't changed my size or shape, but it makes me happy and keeps me strong in all areas of my life. And that's what keeps me exercising. Intuitive rest. Being an intuitive exerciser also means knowing when to rest. Listening to your body requires that you honor the times when you are exhausted. In these moments, you must discern whether exercise will make you feel better or if a nap or a day in your favorite chair with a good book would suit you better. Here is a recipe for true rest written by Kate Finney, a body positive leader and therapist, who knows that giving herself permission to rest allows her to exercise regularly and with more pleasure. Kate Finney, Recipe for True Rest. Someone once told me that you never regret a workout. I have to say, I completely disagree. I love to be active. I run, hike, go to the gym, and do yoga. Exercise is a huge part of my life. Sometimes, however, I need a break. There are days when my body tells me, slow down, take a load off, you're tired. By living intuitively and listening to my body, I know that in these moments, a workout is not going to make me feel better. Rest will. Here is my favorite recipe for true rest. 1. Put on a pair of sweatpants and an old t-shirt. Pull hair back. Wash face, no makeup. 2. Make a cup of sleepy time tea with honey. Pop some popcorn if there is some in the house. No extra trips to the grocery store. Too much work. 3. Find favorite soft blanket. I keep mine on the couch for just these moments. 4. Get cozy on a comfortable couch or chair. 5. Watch one or more of the movies on my movies that always make me smile list. I highly recommend keeping several of your favorite feel-good movies on hand for true rest days. 6. Finally, and most important, relax and enjoy. No guilt allowed. I leave you with one final thought. Because I trust my body, I know that allowing it to rest when necessary does not diminish my desire to exercise on other days. In fact, giving myself permission to rest creates a mindset that makes exercise something I do by choice, something I want to do because it feels good, not something I feel forced to do to be good. Listening intuitively to my need for rest, as well as movement, has allowed me to create exercise habits that I am free to enjoy for the rest of my life. Intuitive living is a process. Listening to my body has given me a much more alive and engaged experience with food and exercise, because I'm operating from how my body feels on the inside, as opposed to how I'm supposed to look from an outside perspective. Rebecca W., Body Positive Leader. Intuitive living is a process. It is not something that you perfect and never struggle with again. It does, however, allow for more flexibility and fun in self-care. It is completely fine to alter the way you eat and exercise, especially if your motivation for doing so is to improve your health and increase your energy level. The basic rule of thumb is to make sure you strive to create sustainable, long-term habits. Short-term changes will only create short-term results, and if they are too extreme, will eventually backfire. Start fresh every day with a commitment to staying closely attuned to your body. You'll be amazed with the results. Body positive practices. 1. Intuitive listening. Tuning in to what your body actually needs can be challenging when so many obstacles get in the way of listening to and following its wisdom. These may include eating what you've been told you should eat, rebelling against rules by overeating foods you've been told you shouldn't eat, getting in the habit of eating meals that are convenient, but not necessarily what your body wants or needs, reaching for foods you usually want, even if you're not really in the mood for them in the moment. The goal is to find a sustainable, pleasurable way of giving your body the nourishment it needs to thrive. In the process, you learn the difference between instant gratification, which is perfectly fine from time to time, and knowing what makes your body feel best in the long run. For example, certain foods may give you a good feeling in the moment, but you know that they cause you to feel sluggish or uncomfortable later on. And remember, you most likely will get out of balance with your eating habits every so often, even as an intuitive eater. But what you will learn is that getting back into balance isn't all that hard when you remember to listen closely to your body. This practice can help you clear away some of the noise in your head, so you can figure out what, when, and how much to eat. Instructions. The next time you're in the mood for a snack or meal, try this meditation. Sit or lie down in a comfortable position and take several deep breaths. With each breath, pay attention to different parts of your body. If you notice judgments coming up, just observe them and keep breathing. For now, put aside all ideas about the right way to eat. While paying attention to each of your five senses, ask yourself, what sensations do I feel right now? Am I physically hungry? What sensations let me know whether I'm hungry or not? If I am hungry, what do I really want to eat right now? Is it something savory, sweet, cold, hot, crunchy, soft? Is there a certain combination of foods that will give me the most satisfaction? Do I want to eat alone, with other people? Is there anything stopping me from having what I want? Am I too hungry to be able to get in touch with what my body really needs? What sensations are telling me if I'm hungry for food or something else? If I'm not hungry for food, what is it that I really need? Movement? Rest? Company? Solitude? Support with an emotional issue? Once you've explored your current needs, try to give yourself what would be most satisfying, whether that is food or something else, getting as close as you possibly can. You may not be able to have exactly what you want in the moment, but take note and think about how you can get these needs met more reliably in your life. Practice this meditation as often as you can before eating a meal. Over time, as you get better at listening to your body and hearing what it wants, you will do this process on a more unconscious level. If you repeatedly come up against obstacles to eating in a balanced manner, explore the following questions. What obstacles are stopping me from listening to my body's wisdom in making decisions about feeding myself? How can I overcome these obstacles? Do I need support from a professional? Remember, learning to eat intuitively is a practice. It doesn't happen overnight. If you've had serious struggles with food, you will want to take this process slowly, honoring any needs to continue following a food plan or other structured approach until you're ready to fully trust yourself to decide what, when, and how much to eat. 2. Letter to your meal. Learning what your body needs for nourishment as well as pleasure means paying attention to how you feel after eating a meal. This is what making food decisions by trial and error is all about. Ask yourself, what worked? What didn't? What did I learn for next time? Instructions. After eating your next meal, get out a piece of paper or your journal and write a letter to the food you just ate. Do this in whatever way feels best, but take note of the different aspects of the food: texture, taste, color, temperature, nutrients, amount, etc., and how your choices worked or didn't work well for you in this particular moment. Some people like to write straightforward letters, while others prefer to write a poem to celebrate their meal. You may find it feels good to add a note of gratitude to the food for giving you nourishment, pleasure, etc., or forgive it for not being what you wanted. Do this practice whenever you feel the need to more consciously pay attention to how you are feeding yourself. It may sound strange to write a letter to your meal, but it's a fun and creative way to experiment with food choices. 3. Intuitive exercise. What do I know? Intuitive exercise is about finding movement that feels good to you on many levels. It's not just about burning calories or getting in shape. This practice offers an exploratory process that can help you get more in touch with your motivation for physical activity. Instructions. A. Exploring messages. Take some time to explore what you've been told about exercise. Can you recognize any external voices, such as those of a parent, coach, or friend that may have influenced how you choose to move your body or feel about exercise in general? Write down your answers, or instead, just think about what came up, or share the information in conversation with someone you trust. What messages did I discover, both helpful and hurtful, that come from other people? How do these messages influence my attitudes and behaviors about exercise? How do they influence my motivation? B. Deepening the process. This part of the practice offers a meditation that deepens your connection with your body and your motivation for exercise. Close your eyes and imagine an experience of physical activity that made you feel completely alive. You can ask yourself the questions here to prompt your imagination. If you've never had a positive experience moving your body, use the questions to think about what this could be. Where was I? Was I alone or with others? Was I indoors or outside? Was I in a city or in nature? What was it about the experience that made me feel especially great in my body? Write down what came up for you, or give yourself time to ruminate on your answers. Use these questions to continue your exploration. What did I discover about my relationship to exercise? Is there anything about this relationship that I need to let go of? Any beliefs or behaviors that are more destructive than helpful? Are there actions I want to take to bring more pleasurable movement into my life? I recommend doing this practice as changing life circumstances and/or developmental life stages create new situations that affect how you want or need to keep physically active. 4. Create your own recipe for true rest. It is vitally important to find ways to deeply rest your body. Doing so not only helps you physically, but also gives your mind a chance to take a break, which leads to better functioning for all that is required of you. Quieting the body and mind gives your heart a chance to speak, a voice that can be overlooked when there is too much activity and noise. Even taking just a few moments to be still will provide ample benefits on all levels: body, mind, and spirit. If you didn't worry about what other people think, or what your inner critic says to you about why you shouldn't take time to relax, what would you do to let your body completely rest when the need arises? Instructions. Give yourself what you need right now to really let go. Take time to sink down into a relaxing nap, or sit quietly just observing a garden or the sky. Maybe you need soft music or a good book. Think of the times you have rested deeply. What was the situation that allowed this to happen? What would make it possible for you to rest now, in this moment? think about your own recipe for rest. And use the same trial and error process you use with eating or exercise to bring those ingredients into your life. 5. A sensual exploration of food, group practice. A fun way to explore intuitive eating is to do it with other people. The following is a practice of simply observing your food choices without judgment, even if you make what you consider mistakes. Before you begin this practice, discuss how there are no right or wrong choices, no bad or good decisions. You will want to agree to suspend judgment about yourself and others, as well as any conversation about the best way to eat. Also agree that if anyone starts to talk about calories, weight, diets, etc., others can intervene and bring the focus back to the purpose of the exercise, which is discovering which foods feel right for each person. Instructions. A. Bring a variety of food. Have each person in the group bring a different food. Or have one person bring an assortment and everyone can pitch in for the cost. You'll want a variety of textures, colors, and flavors. A snack could be a variety of fruits, strawberries, grapes, small oranges, nuts, chocolate, other non-chocolate sweets, and something salty such as pretzels. For a full meal, you'll want to think about having choices from various food groups. Set out the snacks or meal on a table where everyone has easy access. B. Choose your food. As you choose what you want to eat, pay close attention to the color, texture, and overall appearance of each food. You can use the following questions to guide your decisions. Do I want something crunchy, juicy, colorful, bland, squishy, sweet, hot, cold? What does my body want right now? What does my mind want? Are there certain combinations of these foods that look good together? If there are no restrictions, rules, or judgment, what do I really want to have right now based on what is available? It's okay to nibble a bit as you go to your seat, but save most of the food for when everyone is back together in the group. C. Chat and chew. Use these guidelines to heighten your awareness as you eat and as springboards for discussing the experience. Study the food on your plate. How does it look? Without judgment, think about why you chose the food on your plate. What went into your decision-making process? Do you like your decisions? Did you forget something? Is there a food on your plate that you now don't want to eat? Take time to get it right. Remove what you don't want and go back for anything you do. Now, look over your plate and choose what you want to eat first. It may be one thing, or it may be a combination of foods. Put the food under your nose. Do you like the smell? Take a bite. Chew or suck on it slowly. Let the food start to mix with your saliva to give you maximum flavor. How does it taste? How does the texture feel in your mouth? Can you still smell its aroma? Now swallow and see how it feels going down. Was it the right choice? If you don't like the flavor or texture of what you chose, pick something else. If it felt right, do you want more of the same or do you now want a different flavor? How much do you want? Are you hungry right now? Listen to what your body is telling you. Listen closely. Talk about what it feels like to slow down and be consciously aware of the choices that go into each bite. Group discussion. You can expand your group discussion with the following questions. Why is it so hard to listen to our own body's needs for food, movement, and rest, and so easy to listen to what other people say about what we should do? What happens when we label foods good and bad? How do we feel when people talk about being on a diet, or say they're bad when they eat foods labeled non-nutritious? How do we feel when people talk about their specific eating habits, especially if they express anxiety? How do we feel when we walk into a grocery store? Restaurant. Why is a person with an appetite for food and for life threatening to others? Why has eating become so complex in our culture? Knowing we can't always take so much time to look at and smell our food before we eat it, how can we bring even a bit more conscious awareness to future meals so we'll get closer to making choices that satisfy us, body, mind, and spirit? This practice can also be incorporated into other kinds of gatherings. If your group shares food, eat together in a conscious manner, and have a short discussion about how everyone is doing with their practice of intuitive eating. Competency 3. Cultivate self-love. Goals. Develop a practice of self-love. Employ compassion, forgiveness, and humor as you leave behind the need for self-criticism. Benefit. Gain confidence and free up energy to make life-affirming choices. The work of self-love honors the voice of the heart. While we cannot always remove our critical voices or fully insulate ourselves from things beyond our control, we can choose what we take in. Self-love allows me to know I am exactly enough, just as I am. It is the voice I have learned to fine-tune like a radio station, so that its kind and compassionate messages make the critical voices fade. Self-love protects my heart, despite the inevitable sorrows of life. Jessica Diaz, the Body Positive board member. After years of avoiding the L word in public because we were advised that it would turn people off, Elizabeth and I decided to honor what appeared to be a radical aspect of our work. We began speaking directly about love. Cultivate self-love. The third competency of the Be Body Positive model helps you dig deep inside to find a compassionate, gentle, and forgiving voice to guide and protect you. Embodying this competency leads to increased confidence and a more positive, peaceful existence because it diminishes the power of the critical voices that perpetuate insecurity and fear. In 2007, a producer from Oprah's talk show called because she had heard about the body positive and was intrigued by my stories about our young leaders. This prompted me to put together a short video to share their voices directly. At the time, we were having conversations with a publicist who told us not to use the expression self-love. Her opinion was that we needed to tone down our language and talk about acceptance in order for people to relate. In my attempt to follow this advice, I asked the students I was interviewing to refrain from saying self-love in describing how the body positive had transformed their lives. Despite the various ways I requested that they rephrase their answers, none of the interviewees could do it. This experience confirmed for me that cultivating self-love is an integral component of our message. It is possible to go from self-criticism or even stronger feelings of self-hatred, beyond mere acceptance, to a deeply rooted love for oneself. Knowing we deserve to have this quality and making the commitment to reach for it when we struggle ignites a transformational process that allows a whole host of positive changes to occur. The most profound I've observed are the development of trust in the body's innate wisdom to guide physical and psychological self-care, improved interpersonal relationships, and the integration of body, mind, and spirit to support more purposeful living. An added bonus of pursuing self-love is that it will positively transform your self-care behaviors. Eating in a balanced manner and exercising regularly become activities you want to do because they enhance the good feelings you experience from being kind to yourself. You may have been taught that being critical of your body is good motivation to improve your self-care habits. It is the old notion that you can whip yourself into shape. In actuality, the complete opposite is true. With self-love, you ask, "What is it I really want or need right now?" Over time, you are able to answer this question with ease. Your response will take a number of forms, depending on what is right for you in the moment. Loving your body allows you to hear its wisdom. It will tell you exactly what you need to thrive. With self-love, you develop more attuned listening skills. When you don't listen, don't act upon what you've heard or make what you think of as a mistake. You use these experiences as opportunities to learn more about what feels right. Instead of letting your critical voice beat you up, you employ kindness so these mistakes can be the teaching moments that remind you of how you want to feel the next time you're presented with the same situation. Being mean to yourself only makes it harder to learn the lessons, and chances are you'll have to repeat the difficult experiences until you're able to respond with kindness. This practice ultimately leads to more time spent in situations, in all aspects of your life, that offer pleasure and good health. Kelly J., the Body Positive Board Member. When I first came to the Body Positive,